Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Rushit Shah, and I'm also Regional Director at Elcott Global, responsible for executive search and consulting business in Asia Pacific. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing forward some of the interesting stories about success and failures from leaders in industry. Today, we have Alf Norzer and Sandeep Shrikumar from IndustryX, a fully integrated approach to digital transformation journey for an end-to-end manufacturing process. Alf is a founder of IndustryX, and Sandeep is the Chief Operating Officer at IndustryX. Welcome, Alf and Sandeep, and very happy to have you both on podcast series.
Hello, Rashid. Thanks for having
us. Yes, hello. Thanks for having us. Thank you very much.
Perfect. All right, let's kickstart this. You know, I understand both of you worked in Henkel on a leadership position. So what made you both come up with this startup and, you know, how did you end up working together?
Yeah, I mean, I start to answer this question. I know Sandeep already for many years. And there was always the idea to understand better the inside of your business. I mean, you know, if it comes to products, you can touch them, you can smell them, you can understand them via a drawing, you can measure them. But when it comes to processes, then you really need data. And in the past, at least, there was always a lack of data. I mean, there were maybe a lot of data, but at the same time, you couldn't connect the dots. You always had to walk to the machine. You always had to talk to people. You have to look into an Excel file. And this was something which I didn't like at all. I always wanted to predict. I always wanted to make sure that I understand what's happening next so I can avoid a mistake or I can improve something. And this, so the idea came up to do something which is helping the companies or helping the people, the managers, to improve processes and, of course, to get rid of losses.
All right. Sandeep, do you want to add in?
Yeah, Rashid, my background, I've basically been an engineer. So I started my career as IT and technology. And somehow I ended up in a factory. So I ended up in a factory in Australia. And before that, I started working for companies doing enterprise deployment for companies like Adidas, Nikes, and fertilizer factories in US. And finally into a chemical company in Australia. And pretty much 16 years of career, I've been deploying solutions in factories. And because I started this very early, and it was more about deploying technology in factories, and I spend my time in factories, not in corporate offices, and I just want to stress that. I really spend my time in the shop floor, in the factories. And I realized there is a very, very large gap between technology on how you see it on a day-to-day life and how technology in a factory floor is. So that is where that whole process started, where back in 2005, we started a project to digitalize that factory. Means this was much before we had these terminologies of Industry 4.0 and all. And from there, I realized that the amount of value you could generate, because industries, there is a lot of innovation that has already happened in the technology space. The implementation of that, there was a big gap in the industrial area. And it was applying those was basically what I was passionate about. And I think this is what we have done. And this was one of the key reason I believe we started this, because we felt that there is a big gap and large corporate companies are able to do them. But when you look at the pipeline, right, there are millions and millions of small and mid-scale companies as well as corporates. The accessibility of technology is still a challenge. And that's exactly what we wanted to solve.
That's amazing. Thank you, Sandeep. Now, so can you tell me a little bit about IndustryX? Where are you in your product lifecycle? How are you kind of changing and solving this problem? I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, there are a lot of hurdles you had to cross. So maybe you can kind of start from, you know, what are the hurdles, what industry app is directly solving right now, and where do you want to reach?
Yeah, so Rashid, like I mentioned, right, when we talk about industry, right, when you talk about industrial environment, we are fundamentally talking about a 23 trillion global economy, right? That's pretty much the size of manufacturing companies' output that happens globally. And this is sort of numbers based off 2018. So I'm hoping that that's bigger than what it is now. But we are talking about manufacturing companies on a complete spectrum of range of industries, right? You're talking about food companies, textile companies, chemical companies, agricultural companies. And because I've worked in multiple verticals, there is specific challenges in each one of them, right? So one of the key problems when we were envisioning the whole concept was we wanted something that actually could deliver solutions without really going into a niche area. So we didn't really wanted to project industry apps as a solution company for chemical industry. We didn't want to say we are only for automobile industry or for a machine manufacturer. We wanted it to be something where people could come, find solutions which is of interest and pick and choose them. So one of the biggest thing we had to identify was how do we really solve this problem of significant differences in the process layer of it. At the same time, it needs to operate from a platform layer, right? Because people are not going to significantly change things. So, and if you look at even the current industry, it is not like one industry only have or one company only works on one. So there could be an injection molding company who actually ends up making a machinery later, or there could be a machine manufacturer who end up delivering services later. So it's actually scaling. It is going, growing. Every business is trying to make themselves into a platform. Now we wanted to basically envision that theme where, first of all, how can we create a platform where there is solution for every vertical? The second part was, how do we make sure that solutions could operate? Because the idea was never that you build everything by yourself, right? This is how most of the companies today goes into, means there are, of course, open marketplaces. But many of the companies today, the approach was, there is a platform and then I've created apps on my platform and then people could pick and choose apps from my platform, right? So mm-hmm. you could have your PTC apps application store or the Siemens MindSphere store. So this was the architecture in which again does not deliver a complete freedom for the customer, right? Because I'm sort of locked into that environment. So we wanted, another problem we wanted to solve was, how do I offer an open environment for customer where, as a customer, I am always in control of the technology or framework I choose. And fundamentally, the reason for this is technology is changing much faster than what we all imagined, right? And even in my experience, by the time I completed deploying a platform, the technology was already outdated, which means by the time we go live a platform, we are asked to upgrade the platform. And this was a constant cost. And when you talk about operation, it's really about stability. It's about long-term. And this created big issues. So one was about, how do I cover the wide spectrum of industry? Second was, how do I make sure that I have solutions which are already available, proven in the environment? I am able to deliver them to the customer in a simple plug-and-play fashion. Because like I said, one of the problems we are trying to solve is, there are thousands and thousands of new companies in the industrial space, right? If you look at the last, I would say last 5 years,
yeah, you would have significant numbers.
Huge number of companies that has come up, right? Huge amount of investment. Now, you think about a factory now. Now, let's say there are 1,000 companies who offer me solution for predictive maintenance. How do I know where to choose? What to choose? Yeah, it's a really complex dilemma. You go to and talk to any manufacturer. It is not about money. It is not about I finding funds and all. It is about, where do I start? Whom do I select? Because it's always a lock-in. I go with the company A, I could decide on it, but then once I am in, there is no way out. Because I invested, for example, a classical cost of an MES solution. Let's take a very simple solution like a manufacturing execution system. A solution like manufacturing execution system would take you somewhere around $250,000 to $300,000 on an license, right? This is the standard cost of a budget. And I'm not talking about a Wonderware or large platforms. I'm talking about basic platforms, which you can buy from a smaller company. You would be doing an investment of around 200,000 to 250,000 euros. Now, when you make such an investment, you of course do not want to make that investment on a monthly or a yearly basis, right? You are basically very careful. You want to make sure that you are choosing the right vendor. This is a long-term investment because everything goes into that one. And you are talking about a 10-year life cycle of basically making sure that this thing is there. And you, if you think about any companies, how often does a company change the platform? Yeah. So, and as I said, we are talking about factories. You would still walk into a factory and you will see application running on Lotus Notes. They're still running applications which are legacy, those based applications. And you will see all of them. So that environment is very, very hard to change. So when this was a problem we wanted to solve, because such an environment is not accessible to majority of the manufacturing companies. So that is the reason, if you look at 80% of the manufacturing companies globally, have not managed to digitalize themselves. And you're talking about 5 years since Industry 4.0 is introduced. I would say more than 2013, this whole term was coined. So I would say we are talking about 8 years since, but still 73% as per statistics is still not there with the digitalization, which means there is a huge challenge with adopting technology in an industrial frame. And this is a challenge which we are trying to solve, where a customer is able to adopt technologies easily in a plug and play fashion. I can go subscribe, I can use them. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that the data is secure, because data security is another critical topic, right? Because you are talking about industry, this is consumers. Actually, we are, it's an irony that we, as personal information, we put them into Facebook, we put them into Google, we put them into WhatsApp, WeChat. It's all going into cloud, spread across everywhere, with multiple companies owning it. This is a challenge when it comes down to industrial data, because this is our IPs involved. So people are not comfortable with it for good reasons, right? So one of the challenge we had to solve was we couldn't go with the complete SaaS approach where we say, okay, let's put it all inside our box. No, we wanted to make sure that every customer data is unique and it's saved, it's protected in a private data instance. It's only have complete ownership only with them. So data sovereignty was something as key factor. And again, this is built into the standards. And the idea is that as a customer, when they become part of industry apps, they own their data. And this is an USP which possibly not many could claim unless you are talking about on-prem type of installation. But we basically secure that. We basically promise that your data, you as a company, actually is the only one who have access to your data. That's but impressive. At the same time, you enjoy the benefit of a SaaS-based pricing. So, and this is where, Rishit, you have to really think about how do we solutions are deployed and how do we offer the same benefit of all the cloud and SaaS, but without ensuring that the data is lost.
Got it. No, that's quite impressive. Actually, you covered a few of the points I would have asked you, you know, especially about the data trust, which, you know, companies would have for you. And I think, you know, that you answered, which is quite impressive. But just to follow up on that, the data management. So let's see, if there's somebody who's using on the cell phone, is it normally that it's stored on their handheld devices, the data, or is it actually that, you know, you give a secure server on a cloud based on, let's say, Amazon Web Services or something like that, where the data is stored specifically just for them? So how is that working? Just, this is for my curiosity.
Yeah, there is no apps. And again, for the good reason you mentioned that we didn't want it really data on edge, because you're talking about employees, they could leave your company. There are so many changes happens, right? So all the data is on a secure data instance on Azure. So we work with Microsoft Azure. We are cloud native in some way, but fundamentally we decided that industry apps will go with Microsoft Azure because of their enterprise relations, and you understand most companies still use Office and Windows and Word and Excel. So we wanted to keep it sort of in close knit. So basically we are with Microsoft Azure and everything sits on an Azure server in Germany. Mm-hmm. Again, because of security and stuff like that, and the compliance and data regulatory requirements in Germany is one of the best standards around the world. Yeah. So we wanted to make sure that customer gets the best of those portions also, irrespective of where the customer is based on.
Interesting. Is there something called downtime within your platform?
Rishit, again, we have multi-clusters and multi-backup mechanism, hot swaps and things which are enabled so that you, of course, if there is a cluster that is failed, it sort of switches over to another environment and stuff. So we don't expect a downtime because, like I mentioned, I work and me and Rolf works in industrial environment. We understand what a downtime means. Yeah, I was responsible for 140 factories globally. And even if I call and 20 minutes downtime, I could get a call middle of the night, and that was a disaster. So we have taken these parameters into account. So we had to make sure that the infrastructural component that are enabled for the customers have multi-layer of failover mechanisms. So these things are considered, and that is the reason I said this was built with an industrial environment in mind. This was not built with a consumer app in mind. So we wanted to deliver something that actually is scalable. That's something, because when you talk about factories, for example, some of our customers has factories in China, in Germany, in US. You talk about three different time zones, three different environments. Now, of course, China has, we have an Azure instance in China. because of specific reason why China has a lot of regulation around data flow. So we manage the Chinese customers on the Chinese instance. But for the rest of the things, it's all based out of Europe. So one thing is we need to make sure the latencies are in place so customers don't really face trouble with speed and things like that. So those things are considered, backups are considered, and failovers are considered.
Now, kind of just moving towards the client side and to see, you know, how are they significantly getting help? Can you just give me a case study around how have you helped them and how long did it take to onboard them? How long did it take for them to start seeing certain changes and for them to make decisions to see the data real time?
Yeah, I mean, Rashid, again, there are multiple scenarios in this. I will just take one case for now, just for explanation. And this was a factory based on China. The typical reason I love to use the word China was because Chinese factories actually been super busy during the COVID time. Contrary to most of the other thoughts, they had really over-friendling with demands. And even our customers still today believes that the decision he took was something that allowed him to really grow in this space, what he's doing today. So we talk about this customer, a customer who was running on SAP as the ERP system. They had a mix of legacy, non-legacy machineries from a German machine manufacturer. They are one of the world's largest zinc casting manufacturer. So they make cast of zinc for automotive industries and for general electronics. And this company approached us, I think, two to three years back and with a demand to digitalize. We were sort of brainstorming this whole concept and we've actually worked with them. And they were one of the earlier customers. So we also did a couple of companies in Germany parallelly, but they were one of the earlier customers with us. And when we started, they were really a pure paper-driven operation. So everything was via paper, production sheets and quality operations. Everything was happening manually and things like that. The OEE of that 40 to 50%. So what I mean by OEE is the machine's utilization. There was not really clarity in terms of downtime, customer complaints were there. So there were a couple of reasons what forced the companies to really think about need for change. And that is when this product was thought in. We basically started deploying multiple solutions into this company. And they started actually with just an inbound warehouse. And that is one of the reasons, like I said, Roshit, it is a plug and play model and it's a modular approach. So you don't go with an end-to-end one time saying, okay, start with everything. You basically start with one module and look at and try out solutions, right? So they selected warehouse module. They wanted to try out their material flow handling. And over the last 1.5, 2 years, they actually enabled approximately 50 different applications from the store.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So they started from something like $400 a month. And today, I'm not very exact, Rolf, but I believe this is around 5,000 euros a month.
Yes, approximately.
Yeah, approximately. Wow. So, and if you talk about it, this was something the customer was very, very confident about because customer knew that I am able to try a solution. I'm not really jumping into conclusion. They were trying different solutions and they fixed on one of them. They started with warehousing. Then they say, okay, we need something for quality management. Then they say, I need something for manufacturing. Then they went into maintenance. Then they went into machine learning. So they have application from simple, basic digitalization to machine learning, AI type of application, all subscribed through the platform. Now, if you think of it, 5,000 euros was something I paid as standard AMC for companies who deployed MES systems. Okay, so when you took it from an industrial solution point of view, these are smaller numbers. Yeah, because an industrial solution from Siemens or one of the larger players, they are expensive solutions for good reasons because they were built with very sophisticated requirements components. Now, whether a customer want that level depth of requirement or no, you have to pay for it because that's how monolithic solutions work, right? You have a package of capabilities. You cannot choose capabilities that you want. You have to pick up the whole thing. Whereas in our area, the customer was able to pick and choose things that is needed for his production line. So they picked up things like machine learning, AI for machineries, where they had core equipments, automated lines. And for the other legacy, they just picked up normal digitalization applications. So rather than you buying this whole licensed packaged solutions, you pick up modular apps, what is of interest to you. And like I said, they still enjoy all these benefits that they are only paying subscription. They can unsubscribe whenever they want. Let's say business changes, market changes, they decide to switch to some other industries after some year. They could simply say, okay, I do not like to have this application. They unsubscribe and they are not paying for it anymore. So you as a manufacturer is always in control of your cost. Yeah, you control your bottom line. It's not dead money, right? You are not saying, let me put $500,000 depreciation over the last 4 years. No, you are going to put 2,000, 3,000, you go it until you want the capability. After that, you decide when you don't want something and when you want something.
And Sandeep, maybe if I can add on something. So the feedback of the customer was they have a very strong project manager. So there is a lot of do-it-yourself as well. So because they have this knowledge and because they know how to do this, of course, as well, eager to learn. So they did a lot of things themselves, and the system is especially designed for that. And then there is one feedback which we usually get, the integration of their systems and their legacy systems. Sandeep talked about this already, but this is something which many companies, they don't believe this is possible. You know, we have this operating system where we connect and orchestrate all of the data, and it doesn't matter, is it a PLC? It doesn't matter what kind of PLC, a very old one or a newer one, or is it an ERP? All of this data we connect to our system, and then we orchestrate the data together. So whatever new app they plug in is then really plug and play, because it calls the data are there, and it consumes data and gives data back into the system. And this is a feedback where customers say, this is a complete new experience. We have never thought that this is possible. And by the way, by thinking of with whom should I do the project, this is something we are not able really to tell the customer. This is a very big and huge advantage. So the feedback is always like that. But when you tell a customer before, sometimes I have the feeling they don't believe that this is possible.
All right. So just maybe this might be a sensitive topic, so let me know if it's something you don't want to go further. But costing-wise, how does it work? Is it like a model where, you know, what we have on Android Play Stores or Apple Play Stores, where you do not pay for the stores, but you only pay for the apps? Is it quite similar with your platform?
Very similar, Roshit. So you pay only for the apps. You don't pay for the platform. You don't pay for the store. You pay for the application that you subscribe, and when you unsubscribe, that cost is gone. Yeah, so you have different models. And Rashid, also one thing you have to think about is it's a platform. We are basically more like a store, right? So you have to always think about two sides of it. So we have two customers, to be very frank, right? We have the solution providers, who are these companies out there who actually have built great products. Yeah, so they have solved a problem. And if you look at one of the key challenges for these industrial solution providers are, they always struggle to scale. Yeah, look at B2C versus B2B. How many global billion-dollar B2B companies are all in the world when compared to B2C? You have the Googles, you have the Alibabas, you have so many companies in the B2C space who are huge and large Fortune 500 list. Whereas in a B2B space, and I'm not talking about manufacturing companies, I'm talking about technology companies in the B2B space, industrial B2B space. You will see, okay, the Siemens, the Bosch, and the all, but very few limited technology companies who are on that space. And the reason is because every industrial solution starts with an idea, a demand coming from a manufacturer. And this is typical. It doesn't matter whether it is Singapore or Southeast Asia or India or US. They all have a demand where a manufacturer approaches them saying that, oh, look, I have a problem with the machine. Can you build a software for me? Okay, so someone builds it. Over a period of time, they work with that process experts, makes it perfect. Now, the problem with an industrial solution is it's never generic. So the problem that he might have solved will be for a stamping industry. So it's a metal stamping company. He cannot take this solution and go to a textile industry. He cannot go to a pharma industry. He cannot go to a food industry. He can only go to stamping industry. Correct? Now, let's assume that I'm based out of Singapore and say there are, I don't know, 50 stamping companies out of Singapore. Mm-hmm. That means the stretch I could expand is 50. This is it. Yeah, because an industrial solution customer expects to come. You should come and show me the demo it. You have to install, you have to put in something, you have to deploy it locally. This is the model, which means my customer is limited to 50. The maximum growth I'm expecting if I cover the entire market is 50. Now, let's say that we are going to put on a store. Mm-hmm. He has access to stamping companies globally because the way he's positioning his product, he's not saying I'm selling a productivity app. No, he's saying that I have a productivity solution or an app that supports a stamping equipment, and this is designed for stamping industry. Right? Now, there are thousands and thousands of stamping, metal stamping companies around the world. Everyone needs a solution. Everyone typically will go and follow that path, that he will go and talk to a company and make it, try to build it all by yourself. Instead, you are basically creating a win-win situation for both, because on one end, you have a company who have put in years and years of knowledge and expertise to build a product. They have solved a problem for a specific industry. On the other end, that same challenge, the same problem faced by industrial companies around the world, where they would have to invest $100,000, $200,000 and possibly a year or two to build that solution, he's getting a proven product straight away over the platform.
Now, Sandeep, so you know, there are other platforms as well, which I'm aware of. How do you kind of differentiate yourself from those other platforms? I mean, though I understand that those other platforms does take quite a long time to kind of implement, even the platform has a cost. So how do you differentiate your platform with the others which are traditionally there and have been there for a longer time?
Yeah, so when we say platforms, there are two types of platforms out there. One, I would say, is the platforms that are built on a proprietary framework. So if I want to bring my solution onto that framework, I would need to rebuild my solution to fit to that framework. You can assume, I don't know, a company like SAP or a company like Bosch or Siemens. So there you basically could provide or fit your application onto their environment, provided you are basically rebuilding it to fit to their framework. Yeah, because you're basically going to connect or create an interface with SAP or one of those platforms. Because the whole idea of that large company platform is they want to basically build it on their frame of solution. Yeah. Now that means it's always integrated to that bottom layer. In our case, it's open. So we do not have any connection, hard wiring to any specific hardware or software layer. So you could build your application. You could have, say, I have a connector to ERP, any ERP, Microsoft, Oracle, SAP, whichever you want to do. You could say, I can connect with gateways from Bosch, with Siemens, whichever you prefer to do, or whichever companies, you local companies you would want. So we do not limit customers on technology and framework. It's a choice of customer. And the complete platform is built on open protocols and open standards. So nothing proprietary in the environment.
Understood. So for, you know, for a specific client, for them to start implementing with the app, do you kind of come in, or do you basically let them, let's say, for example, you know, I use your platform and I'm taking one of the app, but do you come in and kind of get involved in that discussion while they're using the app? Because sometimes the app also need a lot of manual work, or do you let the app developers and owners deal directly with your client? So do you kind of give them the, you know, interaction between the client and, you know, the developers?
It's a combinational approach, Rushit. So basically, we, of course, are involved, especially because we are in the starting phase of the journey. We want to make sure that the early customers, at least the first 50 to 100 customers, we will be part of their journey, because it's extremely important for us to create this into a success story. So we are very deeply involved. We are making them make sure that they really get the best of the environment. They are getting the best of the solution. So there are a lot of things that goes on with the early customers. But fundamentally, the whole platform is built in a way where they could do all of these things by themselves. So you register, you go and you subscribe. Everything at the end is done by them. We are only guiding this process at this moment. So, and that is the reason Rolf mentioned that one of our customers, they have a very strong IT organization. And the point is that you could actually build your own applications. You could add all your applications also into the platform and deploy it through the platform. So it's a completely open environment. We are not really restricting them to bring in their own internal innovation or use from something from outside, however they wish to do. So some of these supports, yes, there are multiple layers of support. So we have regional offices in China, in Singapore, in Australia, in Germany, in India. And the target, and we are basically starting our office in US somewhere early next year. And the idea is that the regional offices would be providing local support to these regions, and they will be our first point of contact to customers. But whenever there is a problem, anything they want, They also have opportunity that we will ensure that they have support getting from the solution providers as well as experts. So we are trying to create an ecosystem, Rushit, here. So we are bringing in process experts into our organization so that a company who needs some support on maintenance, we don't just give solutions, we can actually give process expertise and knowledge also to them. So we will guide these process and it will be up to the customer to decide whether I'm capable of doing it all by myself. Second, no, I need support and I would like to request consulting support from industry apps to do it. Third, they could directly say, I would like to deploy this, but I do not want to use consulting from industry apps. I'm interested to work with this specific partner in this specific region, and I would like to work with them into my consulting, completely open.
Hi, Sandeep, maybe I bring one more element in here. What we have decided to do, these regional offices, and this is for consulting. And it's everything like Sandeep said, but the idea was as well that we have close contact to our customers, because both of us, like Sandeep described before, we are coming really from shop floor. So we know what it means to work there. We have as well experience with, let's say, IT systems, which were never designed or never with any input from people from the shop floor. And they are usually failing. They are not working well. And you have all of these problems. So our idea was as well to have this regional office, to have our hands dirty. So to be with the customer, to understand the problems, to give this feedback. So our regional offices, they have to handle a couple of projects every year. We will not grow too big there because we have partners. They can do this very well. There are consulting companies who are really, really good. But the idea is that we are always there as well, helping customers and understanding what are their problems, what are their needs, and what are their ideas, of course, to pick this up to improve our product. So not to be, let's say, far away, really close with the customers.
Thank you, Rolf. Now, kind of just moving towards more on the trends. So, you know, what are the more manufacturing trends are you seeing right now in the industry?
Yeah, from a trend point of view, I see a lot of demand coming in. So there is a lot of companies who actually are moving into the area of digitalization. And for good reason, I would say COVID is one of the reasons why people sort of got a push through it, because you can imagine that because COVID was a complete eye-opener, right? And let me take the example of chip industry. When this whole process started, everyone assumed that it will be a huge economy crisis. No one is going to order anything. All these large firms who are supposed to order these chips decided pull back these demands, don't order it, change the forecast. But what actually happened was directly opposite, right? People started working from home. They started ordering computers. They started ordering games, PS5s and stuff like that. And fundamentally, the impact was directly opposite. The demand went up. There is no more chips because, of course, it takes an almost 3 months of cycle time to really come out with a wafer to a chip, right? So the lead time was long enough that they couldn't really meet the demand. We live in a very, very dynamic environment, right? It's completely crazy. And the one who actually would survive such an environment are the one who actually makes the right prediction. Yeah. So if you are able to understand, able to change, remain agile is who is going to survive. And I believe there is a very fair understanding of this problem with manufacturing companies now. At the same time, I believe the reason is they're still not clear where to start, how to start, whether I should go with a consulting company, how long it is going to take, what is my business case. So once this problem is solved, you will see an exponential curve in terms of digital adoption. So at this moment, it's a flat curve. It is not really going sort of exponential, like what it happened to B2C. But I'm pretty sure over the next 4 to 5 years, we will see a drastic change in the way industries are digitalized. I'm pretty sure that every application services that is part of manufacturing will turn into a platform. Today, if you look at if every factory have their own supply chain, every factory have their own warehouses, every factory have their own transportation logistics system, which fundamentally is not core part of the business. As a manufacturer, my task is to manufacture my product and make it reach my customer at the lowest possible cost point. That's as simple as it. Now, when a company is forced to manage warehouses, manage transportation, this is actually waste and it never really could reach the level of maturity what they want to deliver, right? Now, that is the reason you will see that all of these components are turning into platforms. So logistics are turning into services, warehouses are turning into services, and you will see these coming out everywhere in the world. So there are many, many startup companies and platform providers, and they are growing exponentially, who are actually saying, Mr. Manufacturer, Mr. Industrial Company, we take care of managing your inventory. You produce good products, you ensure the quality is there, we take care of storing them. And there are other platforms who are coming and saying that, look, we take care of transporting them. And this is the benefit of centralizing them, right? Because the capabilities such an company could provide, you could never match. It's impossible that you basically, as a small company, create the world-class warehouse systems, because you are only managing a specific area, or you're a small entity when you look at a global scheme of things. So these things are changing the way manufacturing companies will evolve. So industries will change into a platform-based economy. So it will be just disconnected, connected platforms. So a manufacturer will flow into a logistics storage platforms, into transportation platforms, finally into B2C, so that people would order everything just like they order a normal consumer product. So that is where industries will move into. It may take 5 to 10 years, but this is the path it is, because there's a significant amount of waste in the industry today. There's a significant amount of things that you can sort of optimize. And if I look at even the angle of how environmental components are getting extremely important, right? Energy utilization, productivity. So a 1%, even a 0.1% change in productivity will actually create a 1% increase on your sales. Yeah. So that's the amount of differences you could create. So people are getting serious about it. And we believe that over the next few years, this curve will completely turn upwards. And that is where we want to position ourselves as a company who will actually accelerate that journey for companies to digitalize themselves.
Sandeep, I may add on a little bit about the services. You know, if you look today, for example, how companies are organizing their day about demand and what they have to buy, what they have to purchase, it is about looking a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, and to understand the customer a little bit and your supplier. But it's not much more than that, right? So and all of the information, they are going like through a straw, right? Because the information you exchange is based on an email, or it's based on a phone call. So it's very slow, and there's not much information you can utilize. And then when you have the information inside the company, it's very difficult to use this information. Now, I think the idea is at the end that the whole system, you know, everyone has a puzzle stone and puts it into the system, and then you can add on this information, can use this information from all around the world, and you decide, by the way, because it's your information, what kind of information you want to share. And for that, you need a digital twin. You have to have your data on in your digital twin, and then you can start to connect. And look, it's like a domino stone. If the first one asks you to exchange data with, let's say, a customer, with a supplier, and say, listen, I mean, I have a problem here. I could improve if I would know about how did you produce the product? Was it hot? Was it cold? Was it high humidity or low? And this information would maybe help the customer to increase or improve his product. Then you have the problem that you have to exchange this data. So there will be, I think this process has already started, that many customers wants to have more information, wants to optimize not only within a company, where many companies are very good, of course, but for the entire supply chain. And if you look to Corona again, you see exactly that happened. You look just to the next one, the guy, the one is going up with demand, you try to follow, then afterwards he's going down. So you have huge fluctuation. And this, of course, brings this very fragile global supply chain really into problems. And if you would have more information and you would know what's really coming, then you would be better prepared. And I think this is the key for the future. And many companies have understood these problems. And that's the reason why they start now, to think of digitalization and to do something here.
Thank you so much. That was great insight. One more thing, and I think we have been talking about sustainability a lot, and you know, we've been seriously pushing and asking companies to even think around it. Now, do you have any certain policies around with your, you know, app developers where you kind of push them to have that in mind while they're looking at data and while they're proposing a solution? Does that ever come up, or is it still a beginner stage where you have not looked at sustainability?
In some way, actually, we already, with this whole approach, Rushit, we actually solving that significant problem of cutting down the whole need of infrastructures and servers spread across. For example, let's think about these thousands and thousands of technology producers who are there. Yeah, let's say there are thousands of solution companies without a store. Let's even assume that, right? This is very easy to think about from an Apple App Store point of view.
Right.
Now let's assume that there is no Apple App Store and people need to buy them over an B2B environment where every customer is actually putting it in on his servers and he basically is managing it on a date, and think about the overheads that they would create. Yeah, you could imagine that you are talking about significant number of machineries and equipments and servers spread across that is doing additional effort, which one central entity manages it. So there is already a huge amount of value that we bring in when to these marketplaces, because they remove a lot of overheads, they remove a lot of waste, and customer service could be one component, right? When any vendor who is part of Industry Apps platform, we have one central engine that drives the customer service. So customer has one environment where he can go raise a ticket and he can get a service from the vendor. In a classical way, if I have five different companies from where I buy solution, I have five different platforms where I need to raise the ticket. Yeah, that's how it works. So all of these, we actually cut down by making sure that all of them come as part of the store. So I feel that there is a much bigger picture. There is certainly a huge value that we would add by centralizing this, because we do a little bit different than a typical app store, because we actually remove the need of a technology company to have their own SaaS environment. So all that they can do is that put it into our cloud environment, they host their containers, we will take care of making sure that we scale as per customer demand. So you as a technology provider, you focus on your technology. You just build your technology, you generate revenue from it. The entire administration process, the sales and marketing, the collection of payment, making sure that you get paid on time based on the rules that is set, all of these are basically taken care of by us.
Amazing. Perfect. Let's end this with the last question. What would be a piece of advice would you give to people listening to the podcast who wants to kind of shift from a corporate type of job to a startup entrepreneurial type of job? And maybe both of you can answer this question. Yeah.
Okay, so for me, again, as I said, it is tough. Like you said, Rushit, it is always a tough task to sort of move from a comfortable environment to something you want to do. But I could say that, this is always something I feel was the right decision. I feel much more contented. I feel that there is something that we are able to deliver. So you basically feel like you move out of a narrow cage to sort of very open environment. So it sort of gives you, and especially when there are multiple ways of looking at entrepreneurship, right? So there are two angles. One is you say, as soon as you're out of the college, as soon out of your universities, minimum ties, minimum risk, go out and start building the companies. Now, there is another angle of it where we say, stay with a corporate company, build up your knowledge, build up your skill, learn this trade before you start doing it. So in a B2C, the first one is something I would really recommend, because it's all about innovation. It's about coming out completely new. In a B2B space, my recommendation is to follow the second path where you need to learn this whole process. You cannot start a company on an industrial environment without really going and learning that. So, and you would see that majority of the companies are like that, but there are a lot of knowledge available in this world, and there is a lot of changes that they can do. Today, when you are working in one company, your knowledge is limited to that. And there are thousands of companies out there who would love to have that piece of knowledge. So I look at it more as an ability to sort of share that knowledge. For me, that's sort of the main part of it. And I feel that I'm enjoying it.
Thank you, Sandeep. Really appreciate that. Ross, do you want to add on?
Yeah, of course. I mean, for me, it is always a journey, right? And what I learned is when you start small, the next day is a new opportunity and you learn something, you put something on top, you meet other people, they have good ideas, and it gets an ecosystem as well of in your private life and then in your business life. So I would say take the risk. It is very rewarding, I have to say. Be aware that you have to work night and day, 7 days a week, of course. And then you meet the right people, because it's always a team which makes this thing interesting. Treat the people well, then you will have a good success together. This is something what I learned as well. So being a good team is always bringing things forward. And of course, when you start something like that, there are more things you don't know than the things you know. And this is something what you have to explore, because this is what makes it really interesting to figure out how it works, to set up the right rules and regulations. And of course, as well, to fail. Because when you fail, then you learn. And this is maybe more important than any success. I know that many people talk about that and say this is so important, but not many people take really actually this risk. But I learned for myself that this is something which really brings you forward, and which really increases your knowledge and as well the way how you see the world. So it is a wonderful journey. So I can only recommend that people go out and experience this yourself. And the earlier you start, the easier, of course, it is.
Perfect. Thank you for the inspirational words. Now, before we end, would you like to share something about industry apps or decision makers in our audience can reach out to you?
Of course. This is no problem. Yes.
But, I mean, do you want to talk to them directly? Because, you know, really selling, you know, maybe use this to pitch industry apps to those decision makers who can actually make that difference.
I would just put in a few words. So, again, we are an company which is established in 2018. So we are not a very, very old company. We come with a lot of expertise. Most of the team members in the company are more than 15, 16. They have spent their entire career. Actually, some of the people are more than 30, 40 years experience in the industry. And we come with a completely different way to digitalize your factory. So you're talking not about years of project. We talk about weeks and months of project work. And we do not really compromise anything that you would be able to get from a normal industrial company out there, because we are not limiting anyone's choices in terms of what solution they would want to work with, right? So we are able to offer them products of their choice. At the same time, like I said, we make sure that they have complete control in data. We make sure that they are adhering to the standards which are put forward by Industry 4.0. So they are compliant to these standards. And I believe this is also one very, very important thing, that industrial standards is going to play a very, very core role. There are very clear rules and standards put forward by the team. And there is very, very few companies out in the world who are actually adhering to those standards. So we have built a platform on those standards. When you adopt solutions through the platform, it automatically is making sure that you are compliant to these industrial standards. And I'm talking about industrial standards for digital twin, industrial standards for semantics. I'm talking about industrial standards for data security and things like that. So please go to industryapps.net. There are more details. You can always reach myself or Rolf on our emails. And means all the informations are pretty much available online.
Perfect. Thank you so much, both. I mean, I really appreciate all, you know, kindly answering all the questions. And thank you for sharing your knowledge with our audience.
Thank you very much, Rishi. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow elcotglobal.com/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the podcast platforms. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you so much.